Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Well, you naturally took me to my next question. You've obviously been instrumental, the power behind Petaluma AVA, congratulations on getting that done. That was a labor of love and a lot of sweat. How many years did it take you?
Well, it's interesting. It took about, I would say that between the time that we started fantasizing or talking about trying to understand it and it happening, it was about 10 years, wow. 8 to 10 years. As you see it clearly, I'm always going forward. So I never know how long things took. I just know what we want to do next. But it was a part of that need to find and understand who we were. And I now see that, as you said, the aha moment. For me, understanding where we had bought our property, I didn't choose where we bought the property. I didn't even choose the first varietals that we planted. And so it's sort of, I had to understand who we were without having chosen who I was. So it was, as a family and as an individual, that was what led me to really join the association and start tasting the wines and understanding what was going on. And from the first time I approached the Petaluma Gap organization and then a few years later when I came back and was trying to understand it with a bit more maturity, and now I realize that a lot has happened in 30 years in the Petaluma Gap.
So you're describing in a way kind of coming into your own and getting to know who you are, either personally or if you scale it to a region, and being self-aware and understanding that there are particular aspects of it that are worth highlighting, and that actually probably, and I'm going to let you comment on that in a moment, I aimed towards making sure the consumer understands that they're drinking wine from a specific region that has those characteristics. And should they appeal to that particular consumer, there's that distinction really on their table. It's not just a political term, a geographical term. Tell me more about that.
Well, I think that I honestly believe, and we're not there yet. I think that we can't rush things. If you look on winebusiness.com right now and you look at the grapes available for sale, you now see people listing their fruit as Chardonnay or Pinot Noir from the Petaluma Gap. That's the first stage. The first stage is to get the growers to understand where they're growing grapes. Then you have the winemakers that have been choosing those grapes for a while to support it. Then comes the trade and media, and then comes the consumer. So over these past last 10 years, we've been working at the different steps. But now I'm really excited to see people really embrace the fact that they can say, I'm a Petaluma Gap vineyard. And now it's the next stage is, and this is why they're great. And so we need the growers and the winemakers and the trade to be able to say, well, these are the unique qualities of our region. This is what makes these wines great, whether they have a little bit of Petaluma Gap or 100% Petaluma Gap fruit.
So if I'm a consumer at a restaurant and I'm entirely unfamiliar with that designate, and I'm looking at the bottle and saying, Petaluma Gap, sounds interesting. What would you identify as top 3-5 distinguishing characteristics of the region that just pop into your head immediately?
So I would say that great acidity, great minerality, and great concentration of fruit would be the top 3 things that come to mind.
Wow, and that's what you wanted to highlight, really, by fundamentally.
Yes.
By forming this union.
Well, I think what we wanted to highlight was the fact that Sonoma Coast, as many people in the trade knew, was an AVA that was way too large. It included Russian River and parts of Chalk Hill and even parts of Carneros. And so the idea was really to carve out a part of Sonoma Coast that was unique and different. And understanding that there's a break in the mountains at Bodega Bay, that instead of the mountain range running parallel, it runs perpendicular. It creates a wind tunnel. That wind tunnel creates different growing conditions, and that grapes behave very differently under those wind patterns has really been, that's the geography. There's a town in the middle that is associated, and you can point to a map and say, this is where it's happening, was a bonus. But I think that's how we were first because we really didn't understand the flavors until we started understanding that it was about the wind. And it's the first AVA ever created based on solely on wind patterns. We didn't talk about soils at all, because the soils in our region vary very much from place to place, like in most Sonoma County because of the volcanic activity. But the winds are what is constant. So the winds flow every day, every afternoon from early March to late October, and that's what really creates unique growing conditions. That's what keeps us together.
That is really wonderful and so instructive. I just want to repeat, this is the first AVA ever created in the history of this country solely on wind patterns.
Yes.
How about that?
That was, you know what, I have to say, it was a wonderful team. We had a group of passionate environmentalists. We had a retired environmental consultant, Doug Cover, who was absolutely spot on at helping us craft all the document. Liz Touch at Sonoma State was a key part of understanding other areas. Ricky Trombetta was great at marketing. So it was a group of people that really brought a lot to the table. And I can take credit for being a strong, happy, willful person that in the end benefits a lot from the AVA, because we're physically located in the AVA and we're probably one of the only wineries that only makes wine from the Petaluma Gap. So I have gap myopia. That's all I see.
Well, you're a natural leader and that's fantastic. But you also mentioned a team of people that supported you. You share a common vision. And that kind of makes me think about Sonoma in general. Sonoma, I think in terms of perception, often is the place where there's a lot of camaraderie, a lot of information sharing. It's really a communal place. Tell us a bit about that, about your experience living and working there.
Well, what's fantastic with you know, I came from some biochemistry, pharmaceutical industry eventually led to it, where you don't share any secrets. On the other hand, you have five winemakers who buy fruit from your property. They pick the same day from the same blocks and they make five different wines. You know, how can you not share anything that you, it is so, it's such a personal, so many decisions that will alter. And it's a very, people share because it really, it is very hard to replicate. Of course, there are things that you can improve and it helps, but for some reason there is a, and you don't, once somebody told me that the only industry that was harder than the wine industry was the film industry. Because a great director maybe will make 5-7 movies in their lifetime. And a winemaker may make 25-30, you know, harvests in their lifetime. So every harvest is kind of, you know, it's 25, 24, 23. So you want to make the best out of each harvest that you have. And if you need ideas from other people to make that happen, you're going to take them. And you're going to just follow with them. So I think that's part of what's really great. And it is a community that, you know, my kids go to a school where everybody lives so far away that if we don't help each other and we don't do sleepovers and you don't help carpool somebody, you're never going to be together. There's a lot of distance between us, physical distance. So if we don't work at emotionally being close together in a tight-knit community, it really makes it hard. I think people in cities don't understand that living out in the country means that I don't have a neighbor. My kids have never been able to trick or treat in their neighborhood. We don't have no neighbors. So we've always been lucky that, you know, Petaluma will go down and do trick or treating on D Street. Because if not, my kids would never see another neighbor. So I think that when you live out in the country, you really come to rely on neighbors that are a little bit farther away.
Very interesting. So for those folks that want to visit Sonoma, what advice would you give? It's obviously, like we talked about, very diverse and geographically spread out areas. So if they were to try to get to know Sonoma and wonderful wineries like yours, how would you suggest they go about it?
Well, I would suggest that they be, you know, conservative. You probably don't want to do too many wineries in one day. You may want to stay in a beautiful place like Healdsburg and get a chance to walk around and taste at a lot of tasting rooms. I would choose a couple of good restaurants and also make sure that I talk to the people that are there and get advice from them. I think it's always a good industry that tells you where to go and what to taste. But I would choose a region and I would plan on You know, if you're in Petaluma, you can most likely do Petaluma, Sonoma, the southern part of the county. If you're in Healdsburg, you're probably going to be doing the northern tip of the county. So I would say just choose a city and stay within 50 miles of that city.
Great advice. I was actually recently told that Petaluma is under-recognized food mecca, which I now am itching to explore. Is that true?
It is true. It's absolutely true. So we've got a lot of dairies. So Petaluma was a chicken capital, but also there's a lot of dairies out where we are. So Cowgirl Creamery started in Petaluma. The Marine Cheese Company is in Petaluma. So there's a great bounty in Petaluma. I think that the same conditions that are great for growing grapes are great for other products. So I think, you know, you've got a great little town that is a little bit under the radar. So you do get a good feeling for people who enjoy eating well. And it's a little bit more down to earth, I would say, than other parts of the county.
I hear that. And as far as the Petaluma AVA events are concerned, is there a consumer event in the works that people can come and taste the wine and get to know?
Not, you know what, we took a few years off to focus on getting the AVA. Sure. I'm sure we'll have more events coming up, and I think right now it's the time when wineries are understanding how to better integrate it into their stories. There's a lot of wonderful attention that we're getting. You're starting to see it on labels, but I think right now it's a time for everybody to explore their Petaluma gap.
You touched upon a very big pet peeve of mine, which is communication with consumer. And everything you mentioned in this conversation leads me to believe, and also knowing you admittedly in the past, you're very aware of the end user, which I find refreshing and instructive. From your point of view, what are the deficiencies of us communicating with both, you know, the current consumers and, of course, the millennials that everyone seems to all of a sudden notice and bear in mind marketing-wise, because that's the next generation of people that hopefully will get involved and engaged with wine and have it become part of their lifestyle? What in your mind would be helpful in the means and quality of communication?
Well, for once, I would love for somebody to acknowledge Generation X. We're that, right? And nobody seems to be talking about us. And we're drinking wine. We need wine.
Thank
we've
you.
Got teenagers. We're almost empty nesters. We can see it. We can feel it. So I think that the first thing is not to be rushing so fast into what millennials. Yes, there has to be the conversation, but it's not for every brand. I think we have to talk about it. Some brands are better poised to be looking at what the future comes. Some of us need to take care of who the consumer is today. Small brands, we should not get distracted with trends or what the future brings. We just need to, you know, we need to survive. And it's very difficult in such a competitive market with three-tier distribution. The biggest thing that I learned when we had the recession in 2008 was how the internet changed our lives. You know, wine sites, flash websites that sold a product for 2 or 3 hours and moved to the next product really made people aware that they could buy wine online. It really made it easy for you to like that small boutique winery and buy it online. And all of us small wineries are now doing our best to ship wherever we can. So I think that it is important to make sure that when you do develop a relationship with a consumer, that you maintain it. But it's about one consumer at a time, for me.
So to that end, I know that you do a lot of consumer outreach as far as your mailing list. What type of things, if somebody joins your club, should they expect?
Well, we do a lot of events at the property. We're also doing events outside of the property at different markets where we're starting to see that we can take care of our consumers or our friends. And we're trying to be both the same hospitable, friendly family that we are at home and abroad. So that's what you can expect from us.
And you're doing a cruise, is that correct?
We're doing a cruise in November. So a few years ago, we did a cruise down the Rhone, and we loved it. We did it with a Petaluma Gap. So I thought I'd do it now, one with our friends. And we're going on the Danube, going down and visiting a couple of beautiful sites there.
Well, how cool is that? Did you choose Danube?
I chose the Danube because they told me it was the most beautiful sightseeing. Of all the, I loved going down the Rhone River because it was wine country and it was great. But they tell me that you can really relax on the Danube and just enjoy the views from the boat.
Wow. Well, there's still space available. People look at your website?
They can look at our website, and there's a link there to Wine Expedia, which is the company that's helping us put it together. And okay, it'll be fun. I even convinced my sisters and my dad to come on board with us.
Oh, wow. And do you have to be a club member to sign up?
No, anybody can sign up anywhere in the world because we're meeting there.
Wow, that's fantastic. And your wine will be present?
We will be hosting a couple of the dinners there and making sure that people enjoy. So it's kind of I always say that we will be your entertainment on board.
That's great. Well, I have been around Anna for a number of years, and I can attest to the fact that she's phenomenal company. She's witty, sharp, just a great friend. So anybody that chooses to be around her for that cruise or just in general is a lucky person.
Thank you, Alona. It's been great to see you develop also as a writer and as a spokesperson for wineries and luxury products.
Thank you. It's an honor to know you, and it's a dialogue that I hope to continue into the future.
I look forward to it.
Thank you. So I realize that we're entirely amiss. It's almost unforgivable sin. We had a beautiful bottle of wine that was chilling in the fridge that we didn't get a chance to taste. It's a 2013 Kelly Estate La Cruz Vineyard Sonoma Coast Chardonnay. And we just opened the bottle and we're all sweating. Anna, first impressions.
Well, it's always, you were asking me the three attributes of the Petaluma Gap, and I think this wine shows you that it's got acid, it's aging beautifully, and it's all about the Petaluma Gap. It's got the minerality, and I know that California, I always say you can't hide California in our wines because you want that fruitness. It's what we're about. But it's also beautiful to see how they can develop different flavors and different aromas. And I love aged to a Chardonnay. Who doesn't like a white Burgundy? But so the wind gives us that beautiful acidity. And where we're located within the Gap, which is right across the Petaluma River, which were the old seabeds of the San Pablo Bay, gives us great minerality. And for me, this wine gives you that kind of nice, bright, acid, sort of kind of older, not as fruit forward, but really nice baked aromas and flavors, but great mouthfeel. So what I love is that the mouthfeel that I tried to create back when we started in 2003 is still there, and it gives you a nice long, kind of a nice, really long finish. And again, I love this. For me, the La Cruz Chardonnay has always been my comfort wine. So some people have comfort food, I have comfort wine. And this is my Friday afternoon wine, because I can have a glass with no need to have any food next to it. So I come home, I open a bottle, and then I can think about the weekend. Those are my tasting notes.
Wow, I think that's one of the best tasting notes I've ever heard, because actually, I was thinking very similar things. I was thinking comfort. That's definitely the word that was in my brain as I was smelling and tasting it. It is like an old friend. You just want to relax with them. You don't really need to talk, but they're there. They're completely present. This wine is complete. What you described is a full story. It's got beautiful aromatics, great backbone, great acidity, and a really long finish. And if any of those elements are missing, the story is incomplete. So I really appreciate this. This is the proof of everything that we've discussed. This is the wine that's made in the vineyard. It's definitely vineyard, this project. I can see that gravitas. I can see, tasting this wine, how much work and thought went into the viticultural aspect of it. And it does honor the terroir, like we discussed. It's definitely a testament to Petaluma Gap. And I think those distinguishing characteristics are self-evident, after you taste the wine, of course. But I think what's really cool about it is how wine can become a friend. I think it's that lifestyle that I am so attached to, that I get so much value from, is that wine can be a great companion. Friday afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, even Tuesday morning, I was going to say that, but that sounds a bit untoward. But if you're having a really bad morning, I think if you're having a bad morning, that is something that could really help. When I was in the wine business, people often asked me when they should open their price bottle. And I almost invariably told them that they should do it on their worst day.
That's really good advice.
So this is a wine I would open any day, really, particularly in such good company. And I just wanted to say to the listeners, it's not just a mutual admiration society. It really is about the fact that there's so much substance. And I believe the personality behind the wine is so important. It shines in the product. Inevitable. And so I feel like people that, like myself, that are privileged to have discovered it along their journey, the value comes from that connection.
Well, and I think that, you know, you open a bottle of wine, you enjoy it that evening, then, you know, you may not have that same wine the next day. So it kind of, you know, creates memory after memory, whether it's the first time you tasted that wine, whether you, it comfort comes because every time you feel the need to find something that you enjoy, it's there. So it's, I think wine is, it should be part of the whole making you feel good, and not just for special occasions or for hard moments. It's part of the meal. It's part of enjoying it. I get a kick when I see my 12-year-old open a bottle of wine. It's like, you know, he knows what to do with a bottle of wine. So I think it's important.
I think feeling good is wholly underrated. There's plenty of things that make us feel bad. So we can create those moments. And this is simple. You get a bottle of wine on your table, you just upgraded your lifestyle. And if it's a great bottle of wine, then it's exponential, because then all of a sudden you're involved in that. So it's really important to take the time and be mindful of what feeling good is about and create this for ourselves in our daily life. We don't have to wait till Friday evening to feel good, hopefully. And speaking of which, we had a fun discussion in the interim about what it's like feeling good and not feeling good in the restaurant scene sometimes. And Anna told me a story, and I really want you guys to hear it, because it happened to me, and I think it happened to a lot of us ladies in a restaurant setting. I have no idea, but for some reason, a lot of sommeliers still hand the wine list to the gentleman at the table. Tell us about this.
So we went to a restaurant, a very fancy restaurant in San Francisco, because it was our anniversary, and my husband got the wine list, and he immediately turned it over to me. So I chose the wine, and I ordered it. So I actually uttered the words of the wine that we wanted. The sommelier brought the wine back, and he gave him the glass to taste. So he gave me the glass. I tasted the wine and I approved the wine. So we drank the bottle. We were three at the table, not just two. And then the second, we want to order another bottle. And he actually kind of waves at the somm, and he brings him the wine list again to him. He hands it over again to me. I order the second bottle. And the same thing happened. And there was just no way to, you know, it just felt really pathetic that he couldn't just engage with me in the conversation about wine. It was clear we were a couple, and we were probably going to, I probably was gonna know how much we were spending on wine, so there was no need to hide my choice, but he still felt that he had to give it to the man. And I just think that if something you can do as Palate Exposure is really to, you know, it's not to empower women, I just think that feminism is much more about sharing, and sharing triumphs and responsibilities. And there is a certain responsibility in choosing the right wine for the right occasion.
That's absolutely right. And shame on not just this individual, but this school of thought that somehow it has to be perpetuated in the restaurant industry, that the wine list winds up in the man's hands. So if any of you sommeliers are listening, please take note, because next time we'll start mentioning names. No, just kidding. But on a serious note, it is kind of a pervasive and unfortunate, issue that has not, even in today's climate, hasn't stopped, which kind of blows my mind because there's so much more awareness. There's not enough women in the wine industry. We all know that. We talked about just the quality of, the female participation in all the aspects of the industry. And there's some really bright ladies out there that I look up to and proud to be in their ranks. I wish that there was more. And you know, it's a phenomenal industry that I hope grows. And it's not about being a woman. It's about really being good at what you do, owning yourself, and being an example, leading by example. Which is, again, bring us full circle. That's why I invited you on this podcast, because you are, in fact, an example of all of those things. And, anyone that is around you learns by osmosis.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.